We are recording.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Walston. Good morning again, everyone. We are continuing after our short break from the Silverview Apartments appeal. I think we're going back to redirect Mr. Heacock. And Ms. Purvis, I think you had a few questions.
I did. And I'm going to share my screen of the latest exhibit, Mr. Heacock, so that you can see it and we can look at it together. Give me just a moment. And if you could let me know when you see it.
Okay, uh-huh, thank you.
Okay, so I'm gonna just start at the top. So this is the exhibit that the appellants just introduced, exhibit 34, and it's titled the Wilter Mood Associates Incorporated report, and it's dated July 29th, 2005. And it looks like the appellants highlighted some information here, and that's what they were directing your testimony to earlier, but I wanna kind of keep going, particularly on this first paragraph here. And first, I guess before that, do you know the author of the report?
Yes.
Okay, and who is this person?
Joanne Bartlett had been the principal wetland person at Wilter Mood and Associates in this time frame. She was the senior ecologist there, and is I would say very well regarded in relation to wetland identification in the region.
And when you say the region, you mean in Kitsap?
In Kitsap and really throughout. You know, she's done an awful lot of wetland work in Kitsap, Pierce, Mason. Probably not so much in King County, but this ecotome, if you will.
Sure. And so her introductory paragraph here indicates that the absence of wetlands on this parcel is based on the fact that no hydrophytic plant species were observed anywhere on the parcel. And that's kind of where that highlight starts, but it's stops, but it's not really where the sentence stops. It keeps going and goes, and using information conducted in other wetland type studies of this general area. Mm-hmm. And so when she made that determination regarding that the absence was based on the plants, that was not the sole basis. She actually did more than just go out and look at a parcel that she had never seen before and had no information about and not see the plants and then make that determination, correct?
Yes.
And so in the report, it talks about a couple of studies that she referenced, as well as her familiarity with the area generally from other reports. And it appears that that is what she's speaking of when she says, and using information conducted in other wetland type studies of this general area.
Yep.
Well, excuse me, Matt, object to leading questions on redirect.
Yeah, if you could rephrase your question slightly.
Sure. So if the first, mention of other studies in the area appears on page 2 of the report, and the sentence begins, the National Wetlands Inventory. Are you familiar with what she's referring to there?
Yes.
And what is that?
The National Wetland Inventory is an effort of a product by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and it was a survey of wetlands done primarily based on soil type, but also ground truthing. So the National Wetland Inventory map from 1980 was also kind of co-reviewed, if you will, by Natural Resources well, Soil Conservation Service at the time, and was a kind of a multidisciplinary report on wetlands, and again, mostly based off of the soil survey and soil types.
And when she consulted this inventory, what was the determination?
I'm sorry?
What was her determination after having consulted the inventory?
Oh, that the inventory showed no wetlands from that inventory, correct.
And then the next paragraph references the Dyes Inlet Open Space Study. Mm. And are you familiar with that study?
I am not overly familiar with that study, no.
When you say overly familiar, are you aware that there was a study?
Yes.
Thanks. And it appears that she consulted this as well as part of her determination. And what did she gain from consulting the open space study?
Well, I think also just the fact that there would be the potential for additional identified wetlands from that particular study. Again, the 1980 wetland inventory was spotty in certain parts of the county, that's for sure. And so it's not a be all end all of identifying presence or absence of wetlands. It would be just additional studies that would be used to identify wetlands in the general area. Yeah, which this document from the Dyes Inlet Open Space Study would have been additional information she would have looked at.
And then it appears that she also was a part of even earlier review processes for parcels immediately north, including the Social Security Administration parcel that I believe we've looked at on maps, and the parcel to its east, the Glick parcel. So her report indicates that she considered the findings of those studies as well. And how did that play into her determination of no wetland on the site?
Well, her direct familiarity with, and I did not remember that, but that's right. The Social Security Administration building was probably constructed, that would have had a report by them as well. Yeah, it looks like they did that in 1991. Is that right? Oh, no.
Do you mean to make it?
No, I can see it pretty well. Yeah. Oh, wait, well, that's.
Sorry.
That's okay. Oh, here we go. Yeah. '97 to '98 Kitsap County DCD review process of parcels. Oh, there we go. Okay. Bob and Joanne conducted this county review of the delineations. A project called Dyes Landing. Okay. All right.
And so summation here at the end sort of gives a better picture.
Objection to form.
Sure, I agree. I apologize. I think I think that I don't have any more questions about this exhibit.
Okay.
I did have some about a few other issues though that were covered on cross. When you were at the the delineation that we're dealing with in the present sense of what was approved, that all occurred in March of 2019, is correct? That was my understanding from your testimony and from the application, correct? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we looked earlier at Exhibit 35, which was the SoundView Consultants Technical Memorandum. And the memorandum indicates that SVC, TerraScience, Kitsap County, DOE, and the applicant met on site. You were a part of that group, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And as far as who was present from each of those groups, starting with SVC,
mm-hmm.
who was it?
Yeah, well, Matt was there.
I would just object because I think this goes beyond the scope of the cross. I don't remember asking about who was present at these different site visits.
I think he asked about extensively about the site visit and about the report.
There were questions about the site visit. I don't recall any questions about who was present. I'm trying to recall back what exactly, whether there was anything.
There were questions about who was present from Department of Ecology at
the Yeah, site. Actually there was an ecology, and there was a question, I think.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I did ask whether an ecology soil scientist was present. I did ask that. All right, so that's fine. Let her ask who else was present. Okay. That's fine.
Okay, so from SVC, you said Matt DeCaro?
Yes.
And then from TerraScience?
Yeah, and that's... what's his name? Scholes, Mr. Scholes. I don't recall. I'm sorry, I don't recall his first name, but yeah.
Okay, and then Kitsap County, you were there.
Yeah, just me from the county.
Okay, and then from DOE.
Uh huh.
Who was there?
I believe Diane Hennessy was there. Diane's supervisor. What was there? That's Joe Burkar. Sorry, I had to drill in there. And also Neil Molstad, who is our current the wetland specialist. That's our current assigned person. He's taken over Diane's responsibilities in Kitsap County. I don't know how to spell his last name. I think Neil Molstad, though.
Okay. And the applicant. And so...
Oh, and the applicant was there, yes.
Okay. And... You indicated
one other person from SoundView that was there, but I don't recall his name.
Okay.
I think so.
And at that site visit in March of 2019, that's when, I guess, what you recall and what you testified was that's when the wetland was delineated?
That from what I recall, the final line was determined at that time. So yes, that would be the final delineation site visit.
And were... What was the role of DOE in that delineation on that day?
Well, again, you know, when we have any kind of situation where there's a conflict in relation to to determinations, wetland determinations, that the county relies on the Department of Ecology. And in our code, it does have that reference too. The Department of Ecology is our go-to. Sure.
And I should have been more specific. I didn't mean like with regard to like, why were they there? But I meant as far as where the delineation was marked and surveyed, how did they participate? How did the actual people from DOE participate in that?
Oh, yeah. So that methodology that was used, they had the basic 150 square foot identified from the sound view and shoals review and delineation that was done that previous summer, I believe. And then they also looked at test holes that were dug. They were hand dug with the correct methodology. That work was done with everyone looking at each hole as it was dug.
And you indicated that Neil Molstead was there for as like a soils person.
Well,
from Neil, DOE?
I think Department of Ecology, you know, individuals have specific expertise, and as I understand, Neil is a soil specialist. I don't know his qualifications. I have no idea.
And when that site visit was concluded, were the agencies and individuals present in agreement as to the delineation that was surveyed and marked?
Yes.
Okay, no further questions.
Thank you.
Ms. Zippel?
Sorry, my screen just went wonky. So Steve, there's some discussion about the MDNS and the revision, and your name is on that document as a SEPA official. Why is that?
Well, my name is on every single SEPA decision that's issued by the county. I'm the SEPA coordinator, so I'm the staff person. Well, for instance, if some other agency was going to do a SEPA determination, I'm the contact, if you will, for the county. And then so when a decision comes in, say from the city of Polesbo or Port Orchard or state Department of Natural Resources, those decisions are sent to me directly. So it's just a placard sort of thing, if you will. But it's just a naming thing.
Okay. And going back to section 19.200.210, let me just share my screen so we can all see the specific code.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Language.
Helpful.
Okay. Is that coming up for everyone?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And can you describe, according to our code, how is a category 4 wetland described?
Yeah. Category 4 wetland is the lowest rated wetland, which means its functions and values have the lowest value of any wetland. Habitat scores are very low. You know, there's no presence of endangered or threatened plants, you know, or anything like that. It's the lowest category of wetland.
Okay, and the wetland on site, can you confirm that's a category 4 wetland?
Yeah, it's, you know, everyone I think has that's been involved in this project has not made any case for it to be a different categorization.
Okay. And so you just described it as a low functioning wetland. So as a lowest level of function, can you describe how that relates to section C4 that and how category 4 you sort of look at that particular criteria?
Oh, right. Yeah. And if you look at the wetland code 19200210, identification function rating, and again that item C was added in the 2019 the 2016 critical area ordinance review, if you will, and code update, I should say. So if you look at the functions, exemptions for small wetlands, the category 3 wetland, less than 2,500 square feet, and category 4 wetlands, less than 7,500 square feet. Goodness sakes, sorry. Obviously the 355 square foot wetland meets that 7,500 category. They don't contain federally listed species or their critical habitat, and are exempt from buffer provisions with these four caveats. And then again, they're not associated with a riparian area. So there's no creek or stream or that type of function or shoreline. They're not associated with shorelines of the state. There's that part too. They do not contain class 1 fish and wildlife habitat conservation areas. That was determined. And then 4, the wetland report identifies a specific wetland function affected or at risk. In this particular case, the function of that particular wetland, a wetland of that size, 355 square feet, not much function other than it is there. It's again, part of the application, as we understood, was that there was going to be no direct impact to the wetland from, no fill, no disturbance of the wetland itself. And in fact, only enhancement of the wetland with the really the hydrophytic vegetation that's present there on site, the juncus rushes that are there in predominance, if you will, not very not really of much value in relation to wildlife, certainly. And again, the wildlife, the habitat assessment did not identify any, wildlife use in this particular setting.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I mean, when we looked at that and the report and understanding the size of the wetland and its characteristics, very low functioning wetland.
Okay. And would you describe September in our area as a wet season generally?
No, not in our season. No.
Okay. That's it.
Okay. Is there any further cross, Mr. Bricklin?
Just two things very briefly. I'm not on mute, right? One, you mentioned that Diane Hennessy is not with Ecology currently. Is that because she's on loan to the Environmental Protection Agency?
I don't know. I don't know her status. I do know we received a introductory email from her directly that Neil was going to be our new Ecology connection, and I think she mentioned she was on loan
EPA,
I believe. Yeah.
EPA.
Yeah.
Right. And then near the end of your testimony, you spent some time talking about the functions and values of the wetland. That was your opinion, not a recitation of what occurs in the wetland report prepared by the applicant. True?
That's accurate. Yeah.
All right, that's all I have for this witness. Thank you.
Okay. Anything further? Ms. Purvis, Ms. Zippel? Nope. Okay. All right. So then, Ms. Zippel, did you want to call your next witness? And thank you, Mr. Heacock. You are, actually, you know, I did have a question on traffic, but would that be more for Mr. Smith?
Yeah.
Okay.
Either Ms. Vickery is up next or Mr. Smith.
Okay.
Depending on sort of what aspect it is.
Okay. I just had a question on the traffic impact analysis. So I'll
okay. Yeah, I think that'll be addressed with our next witness.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Heacock. Ms. Zippel, you said you were going to call Ms. Vickery, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Do we have Ms. Vickery online?
Could be coming over here. Okay, Candy, you can go ahead and unmute and turn your camera on. Or at least you should be able to. There we go.
Yes.
Good morning, Ms. Vickery. If you could state your name for the record.
Sorry. Candace Vickery.
And you swear to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Okay, and Ms. Vickery, Candy, can you give us a little explanation of what you do for DCD and how long you've done it?
Yes, I have been with DCD for 18 years. In the past, perhaps 5 to 6 years, I have been reviewing preliminary land use projects for stormwater matters, and also traffic in conjunction with Public Works traffic reviewers.
Okay. And can you just give an overview of let's start with traffic since that question came up. Can you just give an overview of sort of what this project's going to do for traffic impacts?
Yes. The project is conditioned for frontage improvements along the property frontage on Mickleberry Road. Mitigation also will be payment of traffic impact fees and a contribution of proportionate share for Buckland Hill Nels Nelson study area.
Okay, and you said you work in conjunction with Public Works for looking at traffic.
Yes.
So when you get the TIA for this project, did they look at the intersection of Buckland Hill Road and Silverdale Way, and what was kind of found for that?
As I recall, the traffic impact analysis did not look at that intersection. And during our review of the traffic impact analysis, we determined that the 2018 deficient intersection list showed Buckland Hill Road and Silverdale Way intersection at a level of service E, and that the PM peak trips generated by this project toward Buckland Hill Road was not enough to change the intersection LOS level of service.
Could you restate the LOS on that? I couldn't hear you if you said D or E.
E.
E, okay.
Okay, and you were talking about whether this development would change that level of service.
Yes. What? Was there a question there? I'm sorry.
I was trying to help you because you kind of got interrupted. So what was the result of that analysis or review?
Oh, I see. Okay. So that the PM peak trips generated by the project site that would go towards Buckland Hill Road is not enough to change the intersection level of service.
Okay. And when the intersection level service doesn't change, does our code require the developer to do any mitigation work?
No.
And you briefly mentioned the traffic impact fees. When are the traffic impact fees collected?
They're collected at the time of issuance of the site development activity permit or when the certificate of occupancy is issued for each unit in the development.
Okay. And according to the code, are they recalculated at that time, or is it reliant on the ACUP calculation?
They're recalculated at that time to current rates.
Okay. And moving on to stormwater, can you just... There's been a lot of description of a stormwater system, so I don't think we need to go into too much detail on that, but can you give just a brief sort of summary of what's planned for the site according to your review?
Sure. Most of the runoff from the site will be collected and treated and conveyed through the site and within Mickleberry Road to an existing county storm system in Buckland Hill Road. A smaller portion of the site will be collected, treated, and conveyed to a natural discharge point at the southwest corner of the site and then south on Mickleberry Road.
Okay, and will all the stormwater be treated prior to leaving the site?
Yes.
Okay, and can you just give a brief explanation of sort of the different stages of stormwater review? So, there's a lot of permit names and types being thrown around. So can you just give a sort of brief overview of what permits are required on this project?
Yes. What is currently under discussion here is the administrative conditional use permit. That's a preliminary land use permit, which is conditioned for how the project will subsequently be constructed. That is followed by a site development activity permit and building permits, where the review gets more detailed as to the details of construction.
Okay, and did you have a chance to listen to the other testimony during this hearing?
Yes.
Okay. And did you have an opportunity to review the comments submitted for this project by Mr. Bricklin's office that included the engineering comments, the stormwater engineering comments?
Yes.
Okay. And will the majority of those issues be addressed at the SDAP phase?
Yes, that's correct.
Is the SDAP required before additional construction on site takes place?
Yes, it's required to be approved and issued.
Okay. And going into a little more detail, does the plans that you review meet the Kitsap County Stormwater Manual so far?
Yes.
And can you kind of give a little bit of more details in terms of how those plans meet what's required in the Stormwater Manual for the ACP?
Sure. So at the preliminary land use stage, the plants are required to be to a 60% design. This project meets those requirements by demonstrating that they have appropriately identified what minimum requirements apply to the project. And I mean minimum requirements from the Stormwater Manual, minimum requirements 1 through 9, which of those apply, what they've appropriately determined what method they are using to meet minimum requirement 5, which is on-site stormwater management. And they've correctly indicated that the preferred methods of on-site stormwater management are infeasible, and that would be infiltration methods and dispersion methods. So they've demonstrated those are infeasible, which gets them to this proposed design they have in front of us.
And can you give us a specific citation for these minimum requirements, just to be clear?
Yes. The Kitsap County Stormwater Design Manual, Volume 1, Chapter 4, describes and discusses minimum requirements 1 through 9.
Okay. Where in the manual does it discuss the preliminary design requirements for ACP?
That's in Volume 2, Chapter 1, Section
1.2.3.2. Okay. And there were a couple things that were brought up in Mr. Leiter's testimony. The first was the rational method versus the Western Washington hydraulic model. Is that discussed in our stormwater manual?
Yes, in Volume 2, Chapter, gosh, I was just looking at it. Volume 2, Section 4.2. It states the rational method may be used for conveyance receiving drainage from a contributing area of 25 acres or less. It is not stated it's required.
Okay, and does the manual discuss the Western Washington hydraulic model?
Yes.
Okay, and does it allow that to be used?
Yes, I believe so. Where did I say that one? 2, section 4.
Sorry, I'm just pulling up the... Okay, and...
Yes, it does. I'm there.
Okay, could you provide that just for the record?
Sure. So it's in volume 2, section 4.2. Talks about the conditions which I just mentioned, where the rational method may be used. For all other conditions, either the Santa Barbara Urban Hydrograph Model, WWHM, which is this, what you just mentioned, or MGS flood models shall be used. So, so for the conditions, for conditions that are not described under where the rational method may be used, then for all other conditions, one of these shall be used.
Okay. And it was also mentioned, there's a discussion about slope of pipes. Does Kitsap County have any regulations involving the pipe slope? I'm sorry, I don't know exactly the correct technical term there, but the specific slope angle.
So I think you're referring to percentage of slope for the pipe. And the manual does not specify any particular specific percentage of slope requirement.
Okay. And there's also a mention of calculations for 100-year storm and things of that nature. Is that in the document submitted for review for this application?
Yes, in the preliminary drainage report.
Okay, and that's exhibit 47?
Yes, or 48. We had that, we thought they might have been flip-flopped the other day, but so I'm
not sure. Yeah, they're flip-flopped on the index. I can pull it up just to clarify if need be, but okay, and that exhibit what was used for the final determination that the design meets the criteria?
Yes.
Okay. Were there previous designs that were reviewed?
Yes.
And did the county provide, any comment or anything that caused them to be changed?
Yes, it... I believe this went through 3 or 4 review cycles where the county identified corrections needed to plans or additional information needed.
Okay, but those previous designs aren't what ultimately was approved.
Correct.
Okay. And so you said you were listening to the testimony, and was there anything in the testimony that made you question whether the plans meet the requirements for Kitsap County's requirements for stormwater so far?
No, at the 60% design level required, no.
Okay. And just once again, so the you mentioned the SDAP. How much detail is required for the SDAP prior to starting construction on the site?
Either 90% or 100%. Okay. I think the manual states 90%.
Okay. And so if any issues in terms of conflicts with other utilities or infeasibility or anything comes up at that stage, it'll be addressed prior to issuance of that permit.
Correct, yes.
Okay, that's all we have.
Do we have cross-examination?
Yes, I do. Sorry, a little slow getting the mute off.
No worries. Yeah.
So on the, let's, on the traffic issue first, traffic impact analysis done by the applicant did not include an analysis of the impacts on the intersection at Buckland and Silverdale Way, right?
Correct.
And so you did that for them? Is that my understanding? You took a look at that intersection, even though, because it was omitted in their report?
No, I would not phrase it that way. We did not do it for them. As part of our review, we look at our own records. And what we find there helps guide our review as well.
And so you said your records indicated that that intersection is already at LOSE, is that right?
Yes.
And I gather there is an LOSF also?
Correct.
What, do you know what the dividing line is between E and F?
No, I do not.
Do you know what the dividing line is between D and E?
No, I do not.
What's the metric that's used for those demarcations? Is that wait time at the intersection?
Part of it is wait time. I do not know all the parameters.
Okay. In any event, there's a gradation, right? As an intersection starts out in great shape, it's at A, and as it gets a little bit worse, B and C, D, all the way down to F eventually, is that right?
Yes.
And so each of those gradations covers a span itself. There, you could be level service E, but almost at D, or you could be LOSE and almost at F, right?
Yes.
Did you assess where in the E category this intersection was before this project was added to the equation?
I think I should say right now that my review, as I said, on as regards traffic is done in conjunction with Public Works Traffic Reviewer, and that is who reviews the traffic impact analysis in detail and provides comments to Department of Community Development.
Okay, so who was that? Is that?
Christine DeGuise.
DeGuise.
Reviewed this particular project, yes.
Okay. So you don't know to what extent this project will cause a degradation in service at that intersection within the LOSE category, right?
No, I do not.
And if in the four condition it was at the top of the LOSE range, almost LOSD, and now it's with the project it would be at the bottom of that range, even though your code doesn't allow you to recover mitigation fees, that could still be a significant impact, right?
It could be an impact. I couldn't say how significant.
All right. Do you know whether Mr. Guise, so I gather Mr. Guise did not share that information with you. Is that right?
Or not to the level of detail you're talking, no.
And I'm forgetting now the name of the what's the name of the road just north of Buckland Hill, something Ridge Road. You know what the road Ridgetop? Parallel to Buckland Hill one
are you talking about one. Ridgetop?
Ridgetop, thank you. You didn't provide any testimony about the impacts of this project on that intersection, did you? At Mickleberry and Ridgetop?
No.
So with regard to the stormwater issues, is this like transportation where you didn't do the detail work and relied on someone else for the information?
No, I did the stormwater review for this.
Oh, you did. All right. What is, explain to me, what's the demarcation between the work you did and Ms. Nelson?
I reviewed this preliminary land use permit to see that it meets the code and the requirements of the storm design manual at the level of preliminary land use. As I understand it, Ms. Nelson provided information to the applicants regarding the existing county stormwater system in Buckland Hill Road.
So you had the overall picture and she had just the issue of the connection into the county pipe in Buckland Hill Road?
Yes.
Right. So you pointed out that let's start at the beginning. With regard to the design of this system and your focus on that this is just a preliminary land use approval, this is actually the final land use approval, isn't it? In terms of whether it qualifies for a conditional use permit?
This is the final land use approval.
Right.
Correct.
So it's not preliminary, right?
It's preliminary storm design.
And part of the land use, this final land use approval is the county required to make sure that the project is feasible, right?
Yes.
And I gather did you listen to Mr. Leiter's testimony?
Yes, I did.
Right. And one of his points was that the plans from the applicant don't show a filter and the 4-foot drop that is required for that filter, and given the fact that this is grade challenged already, that, you know, ignoring a 4-foot drop might be the difference between this project being feasible or not feasible. Do you recall that testimony of his?
Yes.
Now, when you examined the plans, did you find where the applicant shows this filter in the system where this 4-foot drop is going to occur?
No, I don't believe so.
Right.
I guess that's the best I can say. I don't believe so.
Right. And do you agree that given how grade challenged the project is, that there's not room for another 4 feet of drop in the system?
No, I do not agree with that.
Do you agree that if you put So one of the applicant's witness testified that the filter would be on their private property, not in the county right of way, right?
I'm sorry, you cut out there a bit. Could you repeat that?
I'm sorry. Do you agree with the testimony of one of the applicant's witnesses that the this filter would be on the private property, not in the county right of way.
Yes.
If the if that were installed and called the pipe where it leaves the property to be 4 feet lower than shown on their plans, do you agree that that would not allow for gravity flow from that point to where the pipe intersects the county's pipe up on Buckland Hill Road? There's not 4 feet of fall available. 4 feet of fall available there, is there?
I don't believe there's 4 feet of fall available there. There is fall across the property. And as the project engineer testified, that it is possible to install this and get the fall needed.
So the filter needs to be installed downstream of the last catch basin on the property, right? So that it treats all the stormwater flowing off the property?
Yes.
And the last catch basin is very close to the property line, right? Catch basin 6?
Yes, at the, yes.
And so the fact that there might be more fall further east on the property is relevant to the issue of, is there 4 feet of fall available after that last catch basin, right?
Yes, however, these are details that are addressed at the site development activity permit.
You would agree that if there's not adequate fall, this site is not feasible and the conditional use permit shouldn't be granted, right?
At the preliminary land use stage.
Can we stop using the word preliminary? All right, thank you.
Yes, we can. I'm sorry. It's an internal phraseology. I apologize. At the land use stage, I'm required to determine that the design is feasible. The design being feasible does not include an analysis at the level of detail that you're speaking of. The applicant has shown feasibility because they've shown that the LID methods are not feasible, which lands them on this conveyance and treatment method. And the existing county storm system in Buckland Hill has capacity. So it's the engineer's job to design that in a way that will work under those parameters at the site development activity permit.
All right. So as I understand what you're saying is in terms of the treatment on site, LID is not possible. So it's they've got to use this cartridge filter, and there's adequate capacity in the county pipe up on Buckland Hill, but isn't also another part of feasibility whether you can get the stormwater from the property up to Buckland Hill Road on a gravity flow? Isn't that part of feasibility?
Yes, and the plans show gravity feed system, gravity system can work at the 60% design level that's required now.
And they show that without taking into account the placement of this cartridge filter in the 4 feet that requires, right? That hasn't been shown. Right. And you, but without that information, you still felt comfortable making a determination that this was a feasible design?
Yes.
So let's talk for a second about the capacity of the pipe in the going up Mickleberry, the pipe that has that 0.33% grade. You're familiar with that one, right?
I believe it's 0.34, but yes.
All right, 0.34. And in determining whether that pipe had adequate capacity, you indicated that the applicant used a methodology known by the acronym WWHM, is that right?
Yes.
And you made reference to another method for calculating capacity known as the rational method.
Yes.
Right. And you heard Mr. Leiter's testimony that he thought, number one, the rational method should be used, and number two, if you used it, you would determine that this pipe did not have adequate capacity. You recall that?
Yes.
Let's take those in reverse order. Do you have any opinion as to the accuracy of Mr. Leiter's testimony that if you use the rational method, there's not adequate capacity in that pipe?
No, I don't.
As to the choice between methods to use, do you agree that the rational method is the more conservative method in terms of protecting public and private resources that could be impacted if the pipe has inadequate capacity?
I don't know.
Excuse me?
I don't know.
You don't know? Do you agree that the county, although it allows use of the WWHM, which the applicant used, do you agree that the county manual says that the rational method is the preferred method to use? You know that?
I'd like to look at it for a moment.
All right. Ms. Clungeon, Ms. Clungeon, could I ask you to call up on the screen page 2 of that, of the manual, volume 2, section 4.2. There you go. 4.2.1, the traditional rational method as described in most engineering manuals is preferred by Kitsap County for designing systems serving smaller contributing basins, primarily because it tends to provide higher runoff rates than the hydrograph method do, resulting in a more conservative design with a built-in factor of safety. Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
Yes.
I have nothing further for this witness.
Ms. Drummond, you're muted.
Sorry, thank you. So my question on traffic had to do with the analysis on the other three nearby intersections. And Mr. Bricklin did ask about the Ridgetop and the Silverdale Way. Was there analysis on this other one, the Buckland Hill and Tracyton Boulevard?
No.
Okay. All right. That was the one question there. And I had a question on stormwater too, because we had some testimony, I think it was on the last, or, you know, last week, and it had to do with using the 0.34% grade versus the 0.5% grade. And it's my understanding that from your testimony today, that while there isn't a specific grade that's articulated as being required, it looked like, so the testimony from the other engineer was that we had 220 feet at a slope of 0.34%, and that's wouldn't be enough to convey the water off the site, that you would need a higher grade in order to get adequate flows off the site so you don't have downstream stormwater issues. Do you have comment about that grade difference of 0.34% versus 0.5%?
No, I guess, no, not specifically. Only that per the requirements of the stormwater design manual, it does need to be shown that that positive drainage is attained and at the proper capacity and flow rates.
Okay. All right, I think that was my one kind of follow-up question on that. Is there any redirect for this witness?
Yes. So as a stormwater reviewer, do you have the ability to dictate to an engineer in a project how to design the project?
No. My role and responsibility is to see that the project presented to us meets the criteria of the code and the design manual.
Okay, so if the code doesn't have a specific requirement in it or a lot, can you hear me or is the noise too much?
Yeah, I can hear you. There was a slight increase in that sign sound, but okay. Overall, yes.
Okay, if need be, I can switch offices, but it will just take me a while. So just let me know if.
Okay, I think we're okay for right now, but I'll let you know.
Okay. All right. So are you able to require additional things that are not in our code or stormwater manual?
No.
Okay. And so far, our stormwater manual allows for a specific method or design to be used. Can we deny the permit based on that?
No.
That's all I have.
Okay. All right.
I just had one question.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Ms. Purvis.
Sure. So the staff report that's DCD Exhibit 49 mentions Kitsap County Public Works has reviewed the application and determined that the project shall contribute proportionate shares for the Buckland Hills/Nels-Nelson project study area. Can you explain that portion of the staff report in more detail? What the public works review involves?
Yeah. So okay.
It's on page 12 of that report, of the staff report.
Oh, and I don't have the staff report in front of me. So yes, I can tell you that after review of the traffic impact analysis by Mr. DeGeis of Public Works, the determination was made that due to the traffic generated at that intersection and that the intersection was on a 6-year county traffic improvement plan, that this proportionate share mitigation was appropriate.
Okay. And was there any other review involving Public Works of the submittal with regard to traffic?
They had an opportunity to review all the submittal materials as they came in.
Okay. And if they had comments, and they would have been reflected in the report or in the conditions?
Yes, she forwards her comments to me, then they are put in as conditions, if appropriate.
Sure, thank you, no questions.
Mr. Bricklin, any further cross-examination?
Yep, just a couple real quick. You, with regard to the questions you were just asked about the county's inability to mandate that they do more than the code requires, that's coming at it from a code perspective. Looking at it from a SEPA perspective, the county is authorized to obtain whatever information it needs to be able to make an informed threshold decision, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Right.
I believe so.
Right. And, you know, on the traffic, you took it upon yourself to have someone on your staff, Public Works, I guess, to analyze an intersection that the applicant hadn't analyzed, right?
I'm sorry, repeat that, please.
I said with regard to traffic, you had someone on your staff or Public Works staff analyze one of the intersections that the applicant had not analyzed, right?
Yes.
But when it came to stormwater, you had the ability to have your staff analyze the capacity of that pipe using the rational method, but the county decided not to do that, right?
I guess that's accurate, yes.
All right. That's all I have. Thank you.
Any further redirect?
Yes, Andy, does Public Works review the SEPA decision before it comes out?
I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. But they do look at the traffic impacts generally of this project, and that's transmitted back to DC.
Yes.
Okay. And all of the impacts that they found are addressed in the ACUP conditions?
Yes.
That's all I have.
Okay. Mr. Bricklin, any last questions?
No, Your Honor, thank you.
Okay. Ms. Vickery, I think we're done with your testimony for right now. Thank you. Ms. Zippel, did you wish to call your next witness? Oh, wait, let's see, what time are we? 12:20, we haven't taken lunch, have we? would you all like to take lunch?
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. So it's 12:20. So we'll just do the hour. We'll reconvene at 1:20. Ms. Walston, anything I need to address before we adjourn?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. We'll reconvene.
Can I ask Ms. Zippel, did you have any idea how long you have two witnesses left, right? Ms. Nelson and Mr. Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Clue as to length?
Yeah. I mean, Ms. Nelson should be pretty fast. And then Mr. Smith, the planner, so he'll take a little bit longer, but I think we should be finished by the end of today at the rate we're going.
Right. Well, we have rebuttal witnesses.
Oh, right. That's right.
Brief, but need to leave time for that if we can. I understand it, Ms. Nelson will be testifying about the capacity of the pipe in Buckland Hill Road. Is that basically the scope of her testimony?
Yeah, the Buckland Hill trunk line and the connections.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you all. We are adjourned. We'll reconvene at 1:20.